This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 294 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. And Ginger is a little horse.
Or a lottle horse.
Good grief. Is this, I would like to just call it Scotland hangover, but it's clearly not since it's been over
a week.
A week.
No, and I didn't have any symptoms until 4 days after I got back. No, 3 days after I got back. We shall see.
All right. Well, do you have any announcements?
I never do.
That's not true. Sometimes you do. Well, without further ado, as I know everyone's been missing us for the last couple of weeks while we have been AWOL, it's time for our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along with Chapter 18, entitled No Place Like Home.
And of course, the first thing I think of is Dorothy, or the witch.
There's no ruby slippers in this one.
I know. Eileen P., regarding the title. After enduring the longest 24 hours in history, the Frasers and the Mackenzies decide to click their heels together and chant, "There's no place like home." Let's hope that a wee bit of magic will ensue, releasing them from the gathering that never ends and transporting them to Fraser's Ridge.
I feel like there's a little magic in this chapter, but not till the end.
Do you mean the
No. No.
It's been a month.
No. I'm talking about... You better not bleep that. I
have to. I don't talk like that.
You did today, and I want everyone to know.
I'll bleep it. But I won't remove it. I'll just bleep it.
I am speaking of the magical appearance of Adzo.
Oh.
Who should not, by all rights, have made it to the ridge.
So they're on their way home with their new tenants. It's like it is. Jamie says later in the chapter, Diana writes later in the chapter, she describes it as a caravan. That's exactly what it is. It's a lot of families together head to the same place. They're kind of in groups and clumps, but they are all they're together in a way. And one of the first things that Diana makes known to us is that Gideon is an asshole. Martina P. writes, "It's fun to read how Jamie is battling with his headstrong horse, Gideon. That it is so much like himself. However, I don't think Jamie is able to make that connection. I do love Jamie's sense of humor as he wants to ride ahead to be the first one arriving at Razor's Ridge and comparing himself to Moses."
Well, he also had to with the horse, because the only way to get him to settle down is to exhaust him. So the only way to do that was to ride ahead.
Eileen P. writes, "The whole time I was reading about Jamie's struggles with the headstrong Gideon, I kept remembering Jamie's horse sex dream from chapter one. There's that Fraser stubbornness. There's a horse. Okay, horse is male, so that doesn't quite work. Regardless, Jamie will get Gideon to submit, or else snip snip. Okay, bigger than snip snip. Maybe Jamie, the horse whisperer, should have a heart to heart with Gideon and inform him of his options."
I'm sure that's the path he'll choose to take.
So Jamie, after he's gone off and exhausted Gideon, he lets him, he kind of ties him up and walks away. And he's looking around a little bit, and he has one of the moments, but one of the moments Diana gives us with him, one of his holy moments alone in a forest or in nature. And as this moment comes to an end, now during this moment alone, he has different thoughts. He's looking around at the place. He's thinking about life, and he has a very sudden, quick, and abruptly starting and abruptly ending memory of his mom. And as that ends, he is collecting himself, and he's going to go back, and he finds a little gray kitten of all things, and captures it as he would a fish.
Can I just talk about that for a minute? Because
any kind of explanatory stuff is on you. I'm not saying my talk is wasted breath. I'm not wasting my voice.
That's fine. I just get so incensed personally with people and having just animals just randomly appear. Do you know how hard it was for me to get a kitten when I wanted a kitten? It was impossible. And we have a friend down the street who had 7 kittens show up on her porch.
I know. She had 7 ads.
7!
So Summer, but don't let Summer fool you. She may have had a slightly difficult time getting a kitten or cat when they were trying to adopt a cat, but it could just be a cat thing. Because you remember the story of the guinea pigs. Summer had no trouble getting guinea pigs.
That's different because I bought them from a breeder, 2 of them that were supposed to be 2 males, and what they did to create more was a different story. However, what I'm talking about here is stray kittens just showing up in people's lives.
I understand.
And it's everywhere, but it's not me. Like, I'm on like the Nextdoor apps and stuff where people in my neighborhood are finding kittens all the time and puppies.
They know that you're busy and are not home all the time, so they're not going to come to your house.
So frustrating. I would love to find a box of kittens.
Martina P. writes, when I started this chapter, I delightfully learned that we are in Jamie's point of view, my favorite place to be when reading the books. I do love to get a glimpse of his thoughts and to know what is going on in his head. It is a rather nice chapter with thoughts of home and peace. Jamie does enjoy the relaxing solitude, and at that moment, his mother comes to his mind. Jamie is so connected with places and nature, as we know from the 7 years he spent in the cave. Just as Jamie completes his prayer, we get a first glimpse of a wee kitty. I'm not going to name it yet, but a wee kitty. This is another charming scene, and he wants to bring the little kitten home to Claire. Michael M. writes, is it a grange that Jamie finds the kitty right after having a vision of his mom?
No, I feel like granges are way more convenient.
The reason he said that is because, obviously, he's read the entire chapter. Now, that could have gone at the end of the chapter. That could have gone here. I chose to put it here, just not use the name because we haven't named him yet. But yeah, anyway. Whoops, hold on. So you don't think it's... You think granges are a little more...
No, I don't think that's... I think granges are more... coincidences. This is more, that would be more to me like a, because it's not convenient that a kitten shows up when he's thinking
so
about his mom.
Granges are, well, they're both coincidences, but you think that a grange is like, that's convenient. It's something that's very convenient. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, and this is every not time, convenient and at it, all.
And it's usually Lord John just happening to have a ship that can take them someplace or the way to get them into a special party to meet people. I mean, they're always, I'm not saying it's not a coincidence, but this is more of like a, this helps no one really. There's no convenience that's allowed. I mean, all that kitten does for the next few pages is scratch him.
Hurt. Eileen P. writes, Jamie finds the best gift ever for Claire, a gray kitten. After all, no home is complete without the pitter-patter of kitty feet. Welcome to the ridge, kitty. I'm just wondering, how many of you fellow cat parents cringed when Jamie was bitten by the adorable ball of fluff? Does Claire have any more penicillin on hand?
I was just concerned because, I mean, I get nibbled on by my cat all the time, but he never draws blood. So this must have been, if a cat had bitten me so hard, or even a kitten had bitten me so hard that I was bleeding, I would not have kept that kitten. I would not have put that kitten in my shirt.
Kitten's teeth.
There's nipples in there.
Yeah. Kitten's teeth are a lot more sharp, I think, than adult teeth. Not that adult teeth can puncture, as I know, but kitten teeth are especially just like little daggers, like little needles. So Gideon, I think I already said this. Gideon is just an asshole. Gideon is rude. As he and Jamie catch up with the group, Claire is off of her horse and she's collecting plants. And Gideon, being the asshole he is, nips the ass of Claire's horse. And she is spooked and runs away. And so Claire hops up with Jamie. And Gideon doesn't like the fact that he has two people, but Jamie's like, step off. So the kitten had sunk its claws into Jamie, or sunk its claws into Jamie. And as this happens, because of Gideon, well, the kitten didn't happen because of Gideon. That happened because he's a kitten. Remember what we didn't say is the kitten is inside Jamie's shirt. So he's had been, you know, content, purring, curled up, whatever. And at something, maybe at Jamie moving a certain way or them galloping, who knows, it had been disturbed and it sank its claws into Jamie. And this, combined with Gideon, Claire was thrown off the horse. Now, I thought that the scene with Claire and Roger with the Queen Anne's lace, I thought that was just a long enough scene for Diana to show us that Roger has found some of the Queen Anne's lace for Brianna. I don't know if they've named it as such yet. They've called it some kind of, I think, Queen Anne or something, or Queen.
Wasn't it like some sort of wild carrot or something like that?
Yeah, wild carrot. One of the names is Queen Anne's lace. And so he shows it to her and Claire basically confirms it. She IDs it and says, yes, that looks like it.
And can we talk about like how Roger is officially like the best husband ever?
Forgetting the things?
For searching for the one thing. I mean, that in... I know that they were joking about it being a quote unquote romantic gift, but in Bree's mind, I bet that was a totally romantic gift to be respected and have my opinions thought about and to give a gift that literally was thoughtful, like super thoughtful. I don't think he could have given her a more thoughtful gift.
Well, it is thoughtful, and it's also, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's thoughtful and it's selfish. But I don't mean in a mean, selfish way. But if he wants to get some in as much a way that he can also protect her and she can also enjoy it, then yeah, it's a great gift. It's for safety. It's slightly selfish, but not in an ugly way. You know what I mean? It helps them both. Put it that way. It helps them both. Mostly her.
Yeah, but she wants to get some too. I don't think that it's purely a one-sided gift. It's something that they've discussed.
So as they make their way again, Jamie realizes the kitten is gone. He's like, well, you know, go with God, little one. It was already a feral type of thing. So likely it'll survive. And they continue with the caravan. And there are a lot of new residents headed for the ridge. And a good number of them would be being hosted at the big house for a bit. And they finally arrive home. Mrs. Bug welcomes them with a drink. And after Jamie is taking care of the horses, he sees Claire taking off down toward her garden. He's looking around and he gets a hint of a smell of a privy. And it reminds him like, oh, yeah, that's like one of the things we need to do is we need to dig a new privy. And that reminds him of when this first one had been dug and he had done it with Ian. And so that, of course, makes it think of Ian and how much he misses him. And I wrote, we all miss him, Jamie. And he said a prayer for him like he always does. Martina P. writes, it is very emotional how Jamie always thinks of Ian. He misses him so dearly and is not convinced that it was a good trade, Ian for Roger. But he knows the choice was Ian's. And this does not prevent him from missing his nephew. And Jamie is nothing if not honest. As Martina said, he wouldn't have exchanged Roger for Ian given the choice. So as Jamie steps out of easy sight, and as Claire returns from her garden, he calls to her. Now, he had been out collecting some plants for his own posy. And he hands them to her, and we don't know exactly what he has. Diana just did a kind of a vague description of what they were, but Claire's reaction, the way that Diana describes it, is she didn't know whether she should laugh or cry. So that might give us a little insight there. And just as this is happening, the newbies, the rest of the caravan, begins to arrive. Martina P. writes, I adored the scene when Jamie gave Claire the first ever completely impractical gift. He always gives her very thoughtful gifts, but they are of a very useful nature, and Claire appreciates them greatly, especially the medicine chest for their anniversary. I also thought it funny that he copied Roger, except that he didn't give her Queen Anne's lace. Later that night, Bree meets Jamie coming back from the spring house and informs him that he's been in the poison ivy. And so he does wash, we find out later. But back in their room, Jamie is in a huff that Claire didn't tell him right away about the poison ivy, and that she, and he's in a huff that she kept the bouquet. He's like, why would you do this? Thus far he hasn't shown any signs of a rash. So he's likely of his own a natural immunity. This gets them to talk about different types of immunity, from getting a vaccine and having complete immunity to injections that they had received, like for typhoid and something else, that only provided temporary immunity. And she's like, I don't have the energy right now to talk about all these things. And Jamie changes the conversation to Gideon. He says, you know, I may have to snip him. It's getting a bit much. Either if I don't shoot him, I'm going to have to snip him. And Claire offers to do it. And he's like, no, that's okay. Now, she's one of the gifts she got for doctoring was an actual sponge, so a sea sponge. And she's using her sea sponge to wipe off the dirt and grime from the trip and before they go to bed. And a little shell pops out. And in lovely Diana Gabaldon fashion, we get the complete analogy. This time, or a complete analogy, this time given to us by Claire. Jamie, she likens to the sponge. And she likens herself to the shell. She reflects on the things that she had lost. And as she is, Jamie brings her a drink of Father Kenneth's wine. And then they talk about that. And Claire is worried about Father Kenneth. Jamie tells her, as she's undressed, you're in good flesh these days. You must have gained a stone since spring. It's been a good fat summer, aye? She covers up and she's not entertained. she's not amused. And he starts to wash himself with the sponge and she starts to cover up. And he's telling her, as he's saying, like, I like you fat. I like the way you look. I like you plump. I like you this way. As Diana wrote, he's approaching her with his own built-in lie detector. And she sees that, okay, he's not making fun of me. He is telling me something that's the absolute truth, and she accepts his compliment, and he finishes washing. She puts some balm on his hand where he had washed his hands or forearms off with lye soap to remove any of the oil from the poison ivy, and they're really rough and itchy. So she puts balm on his hands and asks him about the posy. She explains that Roger's posy for Bree wasn't strictly romantic and explains to Jamie what they were. And I laughed when Jamie said, what, those claddy weeds? Mm-mm. Oh, my goodness. They talk a bit about birth control of Bree's time from Bree's time. And he kind of feels like he's not pulling one over. He's like, oh, so you say birth control. Well, look at Marcely. That hasn't helped her at all. Claire is a little bit defensive, but she's like, look, you have to use it. And also nothing's 100%. And then that conversation switches to Claire. And he asks her if she were prepared when she came through. And they have that discussion. And she says there is a way to affect it permanently, but she did not want to do that to him in case, because the plan was for him never to see Brianna. So she wanted to leave that open for him just in case she could still conceive, in case he wanted another child. And then they knock boots.
As you do.
Michael M. writes, how many of you talk about birth control as a general point of discussion rather than a quick acknowledgement of method immediately before becoming intimate? I'm taking that as rhetorical. Martina P. writes, the discussion about birth control was very interesting. I don't think the subject has ever come up in their conversations. When Claire was explaining the sponge, did anyone else feel that she was talking about herself? I was very touched when Claire told him that she did not have the sterilization because she didn't want to take away any chance of Jamie having another child. And his perfect response, I have bairns enough. I've only the one life, and that's you, Mokri. So I thought I understood if I understand Martina's question, when Claire was explaining the sponge, did anyone else feel that she was talking about herself? Well, I thought Diana made that clear because Claire even came out and said, I was the shell.
For Marsley, wasn't it about the sponge? Wasn't that
Jamie, when she was talking about the analogy, when Claire was talking about the analogy, she was calling Jamie the sponge and herself the seashell.
Ah.
And so Martina's asking, when Claire was explaining the sponge, did anyone else feel that she was talking about herself? In a way, yes, but she identified herself later on as that seashell, having been taken out of her own environment. The next morning, Claire awakes to touches on her hair, patting on her face, and kneading on her breast. And then something bites her. She understandably freaks out and shrieks, it's a rat! Jamie finds it, and of course, it's the wee kitten.
Mm-hmm. A chitty.
Mr. Weems, part of this whole thing is when Claire shrieks, Jamie flies sideways off the bed and they make noises and there's sounds. So, you know, Mr. Weems is wanting to make sure everything's okay. So he comes in and says, oh, you know, what's going on? And so they say, everything's okay. We just found a cat. Could you get us some milk? And it was supposed to be Lizzie, but Mr. Weems ends up bringing it back up. And as they prepare to get up for the day, Jimmy says he has likely about a week before he must leave to muster those men. Now, Claire will go with him, she says. The kitten finishes the cream and then snuggles with Claire. But what to name him? Well, Jamie recommends Adso. After a 17th century Austrian monk, was from a book his mom had read, an Austrian monk in the city or abbey or wherever it was of Melk. And so a play on words, Adso of Melk or Adso of Milk. So the cat is christened Adso. And Michael M. writes, in this chapter, we find the second ever reference to Jamie as himself. This title has made such an impression on book readers that much of the fandom refers to Diana as herself.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No.
It's just it's a term of respect as the leader of the clan or the leader of the group of people. And she, Diana, is the leader of the people who read her books. And that was chapter 18. Join us next week when we will be continuing our The Fiery Cross read along with chapters 19 through 21. And that is 19 is Devil You Can, 20 is called Shooting Lessons, and disappointingly, 21 is called 2020. I feel like 20 should have been called 2020. And of course, if you'd like to join us as a contributor to our read-along, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/fierycross. There is a spreadsheet you can look at to see which chapters are still available. Shoot me a little message on there and I will add you to it.
And if you guys would like to continue the conversation, we would love to have you join us in our Facebook community. You can find that at outlanderpod.com/group. But thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.